This is Michael Pelias for Jazz Chronicles from New York City. Tonight featuring the work of Eric Dolphy, Part 2, particularly featuring the 1963 New York City studio sessions of July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, which includes the work of Booker Little and Jackie Byard, among others. We'll begin with the Ode to Charlie Parker, one of the great pieces that he did during these studio sessions.
Thank you.
So we're listening to one of the cuts from the recently issued Eric Dolphy Musical Prophet, the expanded 1963 New York studio sessions, recently released at the end of 2018, early 2019, by Resonance Records, you know, out of the West Coast. And this is a great find. I recommend people to pick it up. They've done a great job. Zev Feldman has really done a great job of putting together these old studio sessions and reissuing them. The work itself was dedicated to Eric Dolphy, William Lasher, Woody Shaw, Bobby Hutcherson, J.C. Moses, Eddie Call, Charles Moffett, Garvin Bushell, and Alan Douglas, all people who did great work on this album, both in terms of sound and, of course, performance. The personnel we have is Dolphy, of course, on alto sax, the flute, and the bass clarinet. Huey Sonny Simmons, alto saxophone on some of the pieces, Burning Spear and Music Matador. William Lasher on the flute, who also did work on Music Matador, Burning Spear, and Mandrake. Bobby Hutcherson on the vibes. Woody Shaw on Jitterbug Waltz. Gavin Bushell, Richard Davis, of course, the great bassist that you're hearing right now in the background, and J.C. Moses, drums, and Charles Moffett, drums on Music Matador. We'll be listening to some of the cuts from this period, again, recently released by Resonance Records. I want to first begin with a really wonderful message that John Coltrane and tribute that was paid to Dolphy after his death for Downbeat magazine. "Whatever I would say was an understatement," Coltrane said. "I can only say my life was made much better by knowing him. He was one of the greatest people I've ever known, both as a man, a friend, and a musician." And Charles Mingus said, "Usually when a man dies, you remember only the good things about him. With Eric, that's all you could remember. I don't remember any drags he did to anybody. The man was absolutely without a need to hurt." And, you know, Eric Dolphy, as we mentioned in the first part of our series on him, you know, died a very untimely death. The attending hospital physicians in Berlin thought he was a junkie, that he was, you know, suffering from a heroin addiction, and they treated him as such. He was a diabetic, and he basically was in the hospital. He lapsed into insulin shock and died. This was a tragic moment in June 29th, 1964, nearly now 55 years ago. But what a legacy he left. What a great legacy he left. Some of the talk about Dolphy is he never really built his own group and never became, you know, the legend that a Mingus or a Miles Davis or a Thelonious Monk became, because he never really had a long-term group. But we're going to be, you know, looking at this from both this perspective of the studio sessions and what he contributed to the work of John Coltrane playing with him, as well as some of the great, great sessions at the Five Spot in the East Village back in the day, in a very different era in New York City. One that needs to be re-chronicled and rethought today by the scholars of jazz. We're going to go on to the second piece. Tonight's program is going to be mostly about the music. This is going to be featuring the bassist Richard Davis, who played many, many years with Dolphy. And it's called The Muses for Richard Davis. After this first ode to Parker, obviously an ode to bebop, an ode to the great Charlie Parker, and you can hear all the ornithology and the intervallics that Dolphy is expert at. You know, we're going to move on now to featuring the bass with Dolphy here on the alto. Muses for Richard Davis, also part of the New York studio sessions of 1963, you know, done about a year before Dolphy's death. So we can hear the amazing flute of Dolphy, but the most underrated bass player, I think, in the world, Richard Davis, an amazing figure in the Dolphy Coltrane period in the early 60s. Davis has not really been written about or talked about much, but here he is, you know, you can hear in the background, the muses for the great Richard Davis. So let's listen a little more, and remember, these are experimental studio sessions. This is very reminiscent of Edgar Varese's Density 21.5, the solo flute that he performed in the Ojai Music Festival in 1962. Dolphy was really truly a master, classical, avant-garde, and really, you know, kind of the great extension of the bebop era into a completely different level, multi-layered level of jazz accomplishment. I think we can really hear here the ability for him to just work in a duet with his friend Richard Davis. Very, very amazing work here, you know, in so many ways. And, you know, needless to say, in 1964, before his death, Dolphy had signed a big contract with Blue Note Records to record Out to Lunch with Freddie Hubbard, Bobby Hutcherson, Richard Davis, and Tony Williams. And you can see the way you begin to see this avant-garde and highly structured compositional style that is rooted in tradition. So you have the Varese, you have the third stream efforts of John Lewis, the great piano player, and also of course the classical background that is playing out here. Thank you. We're going to move on to a 1961 piece called My Favorite Things with, of course, the famous John Coltrane, the first piece of My Favorite Things that came out of which Dolphy is a participant in the quartet, the classic quartet. So I wanted to just read something from Coltrane himself. Eric is really gifted, and I feel he's going to produce something inspired, although we've been talking about music for years. I don't know where he's going, and I don't know where I'm going. He's interested in trying to progress, however, and so am I. So we do have quite a bit in common. And then after that, McCoy Tyner, did speak a little bit about Eric was a gifted musician, very nice guy on top of it, had a personal approach to playing and enjoyed expanding the limits of imagination. And I think this is something we should really take into account, that Eric Dolphy was really the jazz musician par excellence who stretched the limits of imagination. We think of Ornette Coleman with free jazz, of course, Coltrane and pushing this later in his journey when, you know, he had gone into the second My Favorite Things late in 63, and then, of course, the spiritual journeys later of Coltrane. But here we really begin to see, and we're going to hear, you know, these limits really being pushed by Dolphy. I wanted to read one other thing from, Mingus. Dolphy was a complete musician. He could fit anywhere. He was a fine lead, alto, in a big band. He could make it into a classical group. And, of course, he was entirely his own man when he soloed. He had mastered jazz, and he had mastered all the instruments he played. In fact, he knew more than he was supposed to be possible to do, than was supposed to be possible to do with them. I think these are incredibly, incredibly rich comments, you know. And I want you to be aware that these great musicians, Coleman, Coltrane, the legends, McCoy Tyner, Charlie Mingus, all were interested in letting Eric Dolphy express himself. So hopefully we're going to hear this in the My Favorite Things, the great 1961 piece by John Coltrane.
Thank you.
So you hear one of the great duets of the horns here, of the saxes. And this was 1961, began a relationship that never really developed further than, you know, just being able to play together when they met up. Dolphy went ahead with its own group. And again, going back to the studio sessions, you know, we begin to see Dolphy going on a different take here. He was obviously not on the second version of the My Favorite Things. Anyway, I just want to give you a little bit more background about Dolphy. Dolphy made 27 LPs under his name, 11 released during his lifetime, 16 came out of his death, including some bootleg releases. And in Japan, 21 have been released as domestic record companies, have been released by domestic record companies. The first album in Japan was Outward Bound in January of 1961, and it was the number one selling jazz album in Japan. Anyway, it's very interesting that Dolphy never really lived long enough to, I mean, he did not live long enough to really appreciate the level of the compensation due him, as well as the acclaim. You know, a lot of this is posthumous, as Nietzsche said, the philosopher once said, you know, I live posthumously, which is not the best way to be famous. You know, it's better during one's lifetime. But in Dolphy's case, I think the fame is increasing as time goes on. You know, Dolphy's music is really a kind of free interplay. I think you'll hear that, you know, between, if you listen carefully to My Favorite Things in 61, you know, it's like five voices if you have five-piece band, independent, or five-part counterpoint. And this is all what he was really trying to do. And you can begin to see this, you know, certainly later in his career and in the interplay between himself and Richard Davis, the bassist. We're going to move on to another piece that was not on the Resonance label, and of course My Favorite Things wasn't either. We'll come back around to the studio sessions of 1963, but first we're going to go to the five spot in New York City with Booker Little, who died untimely at 23 years old. But pretty amazing stuff here. We're not going to listen to the whole thing, but one of the great jazz pieces, in my opinion, of all time, The Fire Waltz, with Mal Waldron on piano, Richard Davis on bass, Dolphy on sax, Booker Little on trumpet, and Ed Blackwell on drums. And I might add that Mingus had three great partnerships with musicians. One, of course, with Charlie Mingus, which we heard a lot of during our Mingus program, as well as the first Dolphy installment. Certainly with John Coltrane, which you just heard. And then the other one was with Booker Little, which you'll hear some of in this piece coming up from the Five Spot, which was one of the great jazz clubs of New York, especially in the 50s and early 60s. Thank you. you can hear the amazing, amazing interplay between Dolphy, Booker Irvin, and you hear Mal Waldron on the piano, these beautiful chords in the background, this monochronic kind of chords that are just keep playing and playing, you know, keeping the time with Blackwell on the drums. So you get an idea of the real genius here of Dolphy being able to master this, you know, five or four others in the group being able to orchestrate this wonderful piece called Firewalls. On to the next track, the classic Come Sunday, probably after Duke Ellington and Mahalia Jackson's rendition of this. This is the greatest of this piece, Come Sunday. This is also from the New York studio sessions of 1963, July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of 1963. Enjoy. This is one of the great gospel jazz songs of all time, and certainly we need more of this kind of spiritual hyphen jazz moment in these troubled times we're facing.
Thank you.
the beautiful Come Sunday with Eric Dolphy, one of the most soulful renditions, as I said, in the league of Duke Ellington and Mahalia Jackson. This is also found on the Resonance Records studio sessions of 1963. We're going to move on. I wanted to mention a couple of things about Dolphy, and we'll be winding down with one of his last performances, well, actually called Last Date, in Europe, in Amsterdam. You know, Dolphy worked both as a performer with others in partnerships. As I said, the major partnerships were with Mingus, John Coltrane, and Booker Little. He worked with the greatest jazz musicians, obviously, of the middle to 20th century. No question about it. I just wanted to mention this last. Date that we're going to do is from the Netherlands. He did this, and Dolphy was getting ready right near his death to work with Albert Ayler, and he really wanted to play with Cecil Taylor, which would have produced something incredible. And I think some jazz musicians try to imagine collaboration that could have happened there. And he also wanted to form a band with Woody Shaw and Billy Higgins, and had also written a string quartet called the Love Suite. Anyway, to go to Last Date, this was the last full performance on record of Dolphy. Very famous with Misha Mengelberg and Han Beninik, recorded in 1964. It's not his last concert, but it was the last full, approach to, if you will, jazz and et cetera. Pretty amazing stuff. So we're going to listen to the first cut from that. Again, this is Michael Pelias from Jazz Chronicles in New York City. We're doing part two of Eric Dolphy. We will certainly return to Dolphy as well as to Mingus and the whole period of the 1950s up until about 65 in a later broadcast coming in the next month or so. I just wanted to mention two things about Dolphy. In 1997, you don't really probably remember this, but in 1970, The Weasels Rip My Flesh was an Eric Dolphy Memorial Barbecue by Frank Zappa. And in 1997, the Vienna Art Orchestra released The Powerful Ways, non-immortal, non-evergreens for Eric Dolphy. And then finally in 2014, commemorating Dolphy's career 50 years after his death, there was a project titled So Long, Eric. And it was Alexander von Schippenbach and Aki Takasi, Berlin-based pianist, taking this up with many European musicians. And speaking of Europe, this is where Dolphy really found a home in the early 60s. He really loved being in Europe. He didn't find the race problem as great there. And I think it helped flesh out and gave him a kind of creative free play that he might not have had so much in the States. So something certainly to think about and to consider in the future. Anyway, we're going to end with Last Date. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll be coming back soon with another program, probably on jazz of the 1950s, featuring the great artists of that period, including the work of Lenny Tristano, someone we need to feature as another artist of the piano phase of jazz, alongside Ellington moving up to Monk. So we will be taking that up soon. So Last Date, Eric Dolphy. Thank you for listening. This is Michael Pelias for Jazz Chronicles in New York City, having commemorated and admiring and respecting the work of the late Eric Dolphy through the 1963 New York studio sessions, interspersed with My Favorite Things with John Coltrane in 1961 and the great quintet at the Five Spot Cafe featuring Booker Little. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back with you soon with a program on Lenny Tristano and some other jazz masters of the 1950s and 1960s.